Beginning at the two dots on the top of Kaf Bet Amud Aleph, Gemara says, "Tanan Hatam." We have a Mishnah in Olot. Ein leNefilim Ptichat Kever Ad Sheyagilu Rosh Kepika. That the Nefilim, a miscarriage, it doesn't have a classification of being opening up the womb. Ptichat Kever Ad Sheyagilu Rosho Kepika. Until the fetus has reached a point where its head has the shape of a pika. My kepika, what does that mean? Amravuna kepika shel tzemer. Like a pika of tzemer. Again, it's not so clear what that is. Rashi gives you the translation into Old French. But from the context and from the Gemara here, we're going to see it sounds like it is a ball of wool. And we're going to see that it refers to, a pika refers to, what the English word is a skein, which means a loosely wrapped ball of thread or string. The Rabbeinu Gershom over here says that ve'itim yifarshe kipika ke'even. It's like a stone. She'nashim atchilot lichroch aleh et ha'sisin. That the women start to wrap around it, they loose strings. So either it's the ball around which they build the ball of string, or it's the ball of string itself. But it's trying to give you some sort of minimum shiur for the size of the head of the fetus in order to know when this din applies. Obviously, there was some standard size. If you sold a pika shel tzemer, it meant this size, and they used either a certain size stone, according to the Rabbeinu Gershom, or according to Rashi, it was a certain ball of string, and when it reaches that size, then it has this impact. Now, the impact is in the context of what we're speaking about here. You can see it's a Mishnah in Ohalot, and that Mishnah in Ohalot, we're discussing Tumat HaMeit. And when is it that Tumat HaMeit devolves upon the house? We just saw before in the previous Gemara that even if the blood was Nimok, even if the blood was dissolved completely into that which was there, still when you give birth, it's classified as a blood, and therefore you're Patur Min HaBechora. And then there was a question as to regards to Tuma, whether there is Tuma or not Tuma. There we said that Rabbi Shimon's din is similar to our Mishnah of Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov, which is that the blood that was dissolved into the liquid there is batel. And therefore there's no Tuma because of the fact that it's batela. On the other hand, you had the Tanakama's opinion, the Chachamim's opinion, that the blood is still causing Tuma. Now, as long as the blood is inside of the woman, there is no din of Tuma because it's Tuma Blua. Tuma Blua, as we learned in the Gemara in the Chulin, is Tuma that is completely encapsulated, that's internal, and therefore it doesn't have a din of Tuma. That is the situation with regards to a fetus. Fetus is completely encapsulated inside of the woman, and therefore there is no Tuma. And even if one was to stick their hand in there and touch it, there wouldn't be any Tuma associated with it. The only question is, when has it exited the woman in order to be considered or classified as a blood mate, that then will have Tumat Ha'ohel. Now, there are different possibilities as to when you would give that consideration. So one consideration is when the fetus has exited the woman completely, and the head has left the woman. In that case, we're certain that the fetus is now out, and given that the fetus is out, it is mitameh. And that should be irrespective of the size of the head, irrespective of the size of the blood. As long as it's discernible, then it would be mitameh bo'el. If it's not discernible, then we have the machloket of the Mishnah that we left off with in yesterday's daf. On the other hand, if it is larger in size, then already that tuma blua is magal, ruined or broken once the is peticha de kever, once the womb opens up. That consideration or classification of the womb opening up is only when the fetus has reached a certain size by which the opening of the kever already brings it into the world of Tuma before it's exited the woman or exited the its encapsulation. And that the Gemara here is establishing based on the Mishnah and Olot is when Rosho Kepika. If the head is that size, then the Ptichat HaKever, the opening of the womb, already makes the bite in which the woman is found to be tameh. And we're assuming here that it's a miscarriage, it's a stillbirth, that there is a dead fetus inside of her. If the fetus is alive, then there's nothing to speak about because there's no tuma. The tuma is because you have a living being that now has passed away, and now it's either going to be a miscarriage or stillbirth, and the size of this fetus will then determine when the tumah devolves upon the house. Again, if it's just small and indiscernible, we dealt with the Mishnah yesterday as to what this consideration is. If it's small and discernible, then once it exits completely, I mean the head has exited, if we know where the head is. If we don't, then when it's all exited, then it makes it tameh. When the head is a large enough size, that's the size of a pika, then already it's mitameh from the time of tichat hakever, when the head starts to press out of the womb, and it opens up the womb in that situation. So amalei chir barav, the Rabuna. So chir barav says to Rabuna, Rabbi Parish shel sheti, o shel erev. Can you please let us know, when we're talking about a pika over here, are we speaking about the sheti, which is the warp, o shel erev, or are we speaking about the womb? The warp is the strings that are on the frame of the loom, and the erev are the strings that you put the shuttle, the woof or the weft, which are the strings that you move through, throw through with the shuttle back and forth, back and forth. And as Rashi notes over here, that a pika shosheti is smaller, the strings of the warp are thinner, whereas the strings of the erev, of the woof or the weft, are bigger. So what he's asking him is, okay, well, you explained to us that it's a pika shosemer, but which type of wool? Is it the wool strings that are going to be on the warp, or is it the wool strings that are going to be on the woof? Samalei, Tanyo, we have a Baraita, which is the Tosefta and Olot, Pika Shel Sheti, Divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir thinks it's of Sheti, which would be the smaller amount, which would be the Chumrah here. Yudomer Shel Erev. Rabbi Yehudim says that it's Erev, which would be a larger size, and in this case it would be a Kula, because the head would have to be bigger before it has this consideration. He's arguing on the Tanakamo that we saw before in the Mishnah from Ohalot. And he says that it's not actually a Gilu Rosho Kepika, but rather Mishiru Tififiyot. And the Gemara asks, like your question, my Tififiyot. What exactly are these Tififiyot that you're speaking about here? So he's suggesting that it doesn't have to reach the point where the head is round like a Pika. That's when there's Ptichat Kefer. But rather, it only has to be the size of tififiyot. But then, what are these tififiyot? Am Rabbi Yehuda Mashmua, Mishum Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Tzadok, Kachayu Mefarshim Yerushalayim. This is the way that they used to explain it in Yerushalayim. Kiparda, which is a mule, not a preda. Kiparda, Shokorat Latil Memea, that opens up in order to urinate. Venerate, Pika Mitoch Pika. And when she does that, you see a Pika Mitoch pika, and that's what tififiyot are, as Rashi says, because it has p twice, which means two pikot. So it's not necessarily connected to the size of the fetus, but rather how open the womb or the vaginal canal is, and that's determined by what you can see at that point, whether you see these coils. Rashi says over here, v'korat yotermi beima v'kaya. When it goes to urinate, it opens up or it spreads more than a normal animal. And at those times, then its womb opens up very large. And then you see these folds or these creases in the womb. Means when these ring-like formations become visible in the area of the birthing canal. And that's what it means over here. When the mule goes down to urinate, it has the appearance of this coil coming out of a coil that are equivalent to or similar to these folds that you see in the womb. And that's the appearance that we're looking for in terms of the womb. As long as she opens up to the point where we can see the folds or the creases in the womb, that's sufficiently open for there to be tumah to exit from there, or to it no longer be classified as tumah blu'ah. And that's the identified time at which the tumah then would exit, and the woman would make the place tameh because of the fact that you have this fetus inside that's going to be miscarried or be a stillborn. That's the crucial threshold at which it's no longer considered to be tumah blu'ah, which seems to be a smaller size than we saw from the Tanakama before. Amar Avuna, Shemati Shtei pikot. Ravuna says, I heard about two pikot, meaning halachically, pika has impact in two places. Achat shel sheti v'achat shel erev. One of them is the pika, the wool, the string of the warp, and one of them is the string of the woof, meaning that they are different sizes. V'ein li lefaresh, but I don't remember where they have halachic application. Ki'ata Rav Dimi, Yom Rav Yochanan. And then beyond that, we have Rav Dimi bringing memorot from Rav Yochanan. Shalosh pikot shemati. I didn't even hear two. I heard about three of them. Achat shel sheti v'achat shel erev. Those are the two that we already discussed. V'achat shel pika gdola shel sakaim. And one of them is the larger pika of the sakaim, which are the makers or the weavers of sack. So whether that means that it's the thread that's used for the sack, and it's a much thicker thread, and that's the pika that we're speaking about, or pika gdola shel sakaim, which we're going to see later on, means a bowl. And that might be the meaning all along over here, which is a pika is the ball on the top of the needle that's used for the weaving of certain items. When they have a needle, you have a ball that sits at the top that you can hold it with, or you can wrap things around when you're using for the weaving needles. So that could be also what it means over here. Vainly the Faresh. Once again, I don't know where these three pikot have halachic implications or application. Kiata Ravin Persha, when Ravin came from Eretz Yisrael, he explained it, Mishmei the Rabbi Yochanan, Shelisha Kishel Sheti. The case that we discussed until now is that of Sheti, which is what we saw in the name of Rabbi Meir. Pika Shel Sheti is the size that matters with regards to the Mishnah and Olot of the Petichat HaKever. How large does the baby's head have to be in order for that classification of Petichat HaKever to take effect? That is Kishel Sheti. Shel Behema Kishel Erev. By a Behema, it's the size of Erev. The way Rashi explains it over here is, it's the similar circumstance just with an animal. By a woman, if there's a stillborn inside, or there's going to be a miscarriage of a fetus that already has this form, there's going to be tumat hamet or tumat ohel. That's the classification. Inside of a behema, if the fetus has died inside of the animal, that fetus has a din of tumat nevela. And that tumat nevela, then when does it have impact, or when does it start to be mitameh? Because as we learned in the Gemara in Chulin, if you stick your hand all the way into the behema and you touch a fetus that is dead inside the animal, you're not tameh because it's tuma belua. When does that stop? Or when does the threshold at which the tuma is no longer considered to be belua, but rather it's something that if you come into contact with, will make you tameh? So that is when the head of the animal is goshel erev, then when it's exiting, then already the tuma is no longer classified as being blua. And pikak dolashel sakaim. And then the larger one of the sakaim, kitzitnan. That has to do with a mishnah in Ohalot, which is gush. Habami beta pras meretz amim. If you have a clod of earth that came from a beta pras in general, is a field in which there was a kever, and that field got plowed over. When the field got plowed, we assume midr abanan, that there was a disbursement of the bones or whatever was there in the kever throughout the area of Beit HaPras, which is a size that Chachamim determined of how far the plow is going to carry the bones or the structure of the mate from where it is. So you'll no longer be mitameh tumat ohel if you walk in that Beit HaPras, because the skeletal remains have been distributed all over the place, and therefore you don't have together in one place sufficient amount of the remains in order to make you tameh tumat ohel. What you do have a problem with is tumat maga and tumat masa. If you come into contact with the items there, you might be coming into a etzem kisse ora, which is a small bone, and that's enough to make you tameh tumat ohel. Or masa. Masa here doesn't necessarily mean you have to carry it. Even if you move it while you're walking, you have a hesed, you're also going to be tameh. And so therefore, the Chachamim imposed tumah midrabanan on such a field, because of the worries of maga masab that could arise from crossing through such a field. Now that's true in Eretz Yisrael, and it has certain implications with regard to Tumah. The Gemara speaks about dispensations for Beit HaPras. For instance, if it has a path that is well-worn that you walk through over there, because people have walked through there so many times and made a well-worn path, there's not going to be Tumah maga masa anymore, because if there are any bones, they already got pushed to the side or pressed in, by which you're not going to touch them anymore. Or they're no longer loose over there. There will no be heset or masa. So in that case, you may be able to traverse the Beit HaPras on such a well-worn path. Or the Gemara gives another alternative, which is min hapeach. If you lay down and you blow the earth in front of you and you check it as you're going through, it's equivalent of doing an archaeological dig where you're sifting, where you're going through to make sure that there's no bones in the area that you're traversing in the field. Then also you'll be tahor because you'll make sure there's, so that you don't come into contact with a bone or you don't move a bone. Those are the two ways to deal with it. The chachamim also were gozer on chutz la'aretz, that it has a din of tumat hamet, or basically the fear that there are burials in random places in the chutz la'aretz, and therefore you'll have tumat hamet, or in essence, everywhere in Eretz Amim has a din of beit ha'pras. So it's a little bit redundant to say beit ha'pras me Eretz Amim, because almost by definition, the Eretz Amim is beit ha'pras because of this problem, which is that we assume that their kvarim distributed randomly in chutz la'aretz, and then it got plowed around or moved around. Because of that, they would go there, and any afar that comes from chutz la'aretz, or if you go to chutz la'aretz, you have the same problem. There is a tumah derabanan, although the Girsa and the Mishnah and all oath is kushabami beit ha'pras umi Eretz Amim, which would then make it easier, because then the takana would be about both of them, not that beit ha'pras mi Eretz Amim. It's actually two separate issues, and then it makes sense that it was speaking about a beit ha'pras and separately Eretz Amim. And now they're saying this, how much earth do you need to bring from chutz la'aretz in order to have this problem? They say that it has to be shiro kepika gdola shel sakaim. It has to be the size of the large ball of the sack makers. Whether again that means the ball on top of their weaving needle, whether it means the ball of thread that they use to make the sacks, and we'll see in a second maybe some other measurements that equate to this. If it's that size, then it has tuma of Eretz Amim. Shehu, it is similar to chutam ha-martzufim, the seal of the large bags. Now, martzufim are like large bags that they use for shipping items. It was used many times in ships to carry the merchandise. Sometimes they're made out of leather. Rashi over here speaks of them made out of reeds over here. But there are these very, very large bags, and then they seal the top in order to ensure that whatever's in there stays put and stays fresh. And now what we're speaking about is the chotam that is on the top of the martzuf of this sack. And it's similar in nature to that which you have on the top of the barrels that are made in Beit Lechem. So here they're speaking about Kli cheres, to speak about earthenware utensils, these large casks or these large barrels that they make, and the seal that's on top. Now, in most cases, you had a seal on top was like a flat seal that they used to then lock down with tarring or cementing it in place and then sealing it. In Beit Lechem, they used to make it with a cap on the top, similar to what you have in a kettle or an urn where you have some sort of cover on the top that can be taken on and off. That cover has a ball on the top you use as a handle to be able to lift it off the top of whatever it is that you have. So in Beit Lechem, they were famous for their barrels or their large earthenware flasks. And then on top, they used to have this cap cover that had a ball on the top. So that ball on top is what we're speaking about, which is similar to the chotam, the seal of the martzuf, of the sacks that they used to put on top. And that's similar in size to the pika shel sakaim. So just giving you a number of different items that have a similar size and a similar structure. You can see this in the Balei Tosafot when they explain it. That cover has a handle on it. So that they make to hold it. And it's circular and it's similar to what you have as the chotam ha-martzufim. And that's similar to the pika shel sakaim. So they just give you a number of ways to measure this item or similar items that have a size or ball size that matches up to this pika shel sakaim. Amar Reish Lakish Mishum Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah. Reish Lakish says over in the name of Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah, in all likelihood is the grandson of Rabbi, Halukeach Tzir Me'amaretz. Someone who purchases fish brine from an Amaretz, Meshiko b'mayim tahor. You can put it into the mikveh, and it is tahor. Mimanav shach. Because no matter what you have here, you're going to work out okay. Imaya ruba ninhu. If the majority of what we find here in this brine is water, then it will be classified as water. Gavin David luhu ashaka tahari luhu. Now that you put them into the mikveh, it becomes tahor. Not that ochlim and mashkim can become tahor through the mikveh. That's not true. Only kelim and adam can become tahor through the mikveh. Ochel and mashke, once they're tamei, there's no way to rid them of that tumah, with the exception of planting them. If you plant them in the ground and they take root in the ground, since they become mechuber the karka, they become tohorim from that zriya. Not necessarily that we would allow you to do that lechatchila, but if it is planted, it will successfully eliminate the tumah. And so the Gemara in Psachim speaks about a similar concept with regards to water that's placed in a mikveh. That when you place water into a mikveh, and the mikveh is constituted of water, then it's the equivalent of planting the water, being zoreya the water in the waters of the mikveh. So that's only true of water, because water is similar to what's in the mikveh. It doesn't work by any other ochlim u'mashkim. But if it is water, and you put it into the mikveh, becoming one with the mikveh now basically makes it like it is the mikveh. And given that it's like the mikveh, it becomes tahor, because you've now planted it as if in the ground or in the mikveh, and that makes it tahor. So if this fish brine is rove water, then you're dealing with water, and water hashaka can work for. So again, once you've done hashaka, it's tahor. Viru bat sir ninu. On the other hand, if the majority is the brine and not the water, sir la bar kibulei tumahu. Sir, brine, doesn't have a din of tumah. Rashi over here says, because the zeya ba'almahu, it's just the sweat of the fish. When you salt them, it causes the leaching of that liquid from the fish, but it's not really a liquid, it's not really an ochel. It doesn't have a status of Kabbalat Tumah, because it's not classified as an ochel. And the Rabbeinu Gershom says something similar, the zeya ba'almahu. Doesn't have a classification of a mashke, and therefore it's not Mikabel Tumah. So if you have this seer that you bought from the Amaretz, and you're afraid that he caused it to be Tameh, he touched it and made it Tameh, then Mimon of Shachim Vimim Taheret, by submerging it in the mikveh. Because if it's rove water, then you have Ashaka now, it's Ri'ah, and now it's Tahor. If you have rove brine now, then it wasn't Mikabel Tumah in the first place, and you don't have to worry about it. So Mimon of Shach, now it's Tahor. Ma'ika Mishum Hanach Mi'uta Demayo. What about the minority of water that's left in the fish brine? Maybe that is Mikabel Tumah. And then how do you deal with that? Hanach Batluhu Biruba. They become Batel to the robe. The robe is brine. The minority is the water. The water now is Batel, nullified to the brine that's there. And that water that might have been Tameh is no longer relevant because it's Batel to the brine in which it is contained. So that is Rish Lakish's statement from Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah about this purchase of Tzir from Haaretz, that we can deal with it and make it Tahor because of this Mimon of Shach. Amar Rabbi Yirmiya, Loshanu, Ela, Litbol Behen Pito. That's only true if you're going to use the brine for a dip, or basically like a salad dressing, or a little dip that you're going to put your bread into. That will work. Avalik deira lo. But if you put it into a pot to cook it, that will be problematic, because matzam min et mino vene or. You have a problem here, which is the water that's in the pot that you're using for the cooking now finds the water in the brine, and now it causes the water in the brine to ne'ur. Now, you can, different definitions of the word ne'ur. Ne'ur could be from the word lehito re'er, which means to awaken. That's the way Rashi explains it in other places in Shas, which is chozer ve'ne'ur means the waters of the k'deira caused the waters that were in the brine to awaken before they were nullified, before they didn't exist because they were batel to the brine. But now that they've been joined together with other waters, it brings them back to life. It gives them a significance once again. And now they are an issue. That's what b'nei ur means. The Rabbeinu Gershom says that b'nei ur hu kmo nistalek. Nei ur over here means to shake away or to remove. So nei ur is used also to mean to shake or to release from something, and that's what he means over here. Nistalek means it's now been removed from its status as a minority and nullified, and it's regained significance rather than awaken. Over here it means to ne'or, to be shaken out of its stillness or shaken out of its slumber or hibernation. That's what it means over here. And others still say v'ne'or means le'itarev, to be mixed up and to be joined together through a mixing process. But all of them are after the same thing in the end, which is you've now brought the water to the forefront once again. Now, once you've awakened this water, that little water that was tamei now affects the water that's in the pot, and that makes the waters in the pot tameim, because now you have water touching water, and now you have a problem on your hands. And that's what Rabbi Yirmiyah says, you have to qualify this. This all works if you're not going to get it together with other water. If you are going to keep it and use it as it is, as a brine, you can keep it tahor. But if you're going to join it with other water, you're going to have a problem, because then you're going to reawaken this water that is tamei, that's a minority and nullified to the brine. And that's going to bring it back to the forefront and make the other waters tamei, and then you're going to have a problem on your hands. Rashi over here says that the waters in the pot find the waters of the brine, umitztarfim yachad, and then they join together, verabim aletzir, and then they overwhelm the tzir, umitamim oto, and they make it tamei. And as Tosafot points out, that really can't be the case, because brine, as we said before, is not mekabel tumah. So the fact that the waters overwhelm the brine and make it tamei is not true. They don't make the brine tamei, but it just means that they overwhelm the brine to the point where they're now the majority factor here, and they'll be mitamei, whatever it is that they come into contact with, not the brine itself, but they'll be mitamei because now the waters have become the majority, and that minority of water that was tamei affects all the waters that are there. And now you have this tuma that is once again at the forefront or a problem for you. Now Tosfot over here makes a number of qualifications which are important because they have halachic significance. The first of which is that when you have the water and the brine together, the consideration over here is rove, which is if there's rove of water, then we classify it as water. If it's rove of brine, we classify it as brine. But we don't worry about what's called notein tam, whether there's flavor or not flavor. So Tosfot makes a distinction which is important, which is flavor and notein tam have to do with isur and heter. But when it comes to tuma and tahara, that there is no issue of notein tam. Notein tam is not a consideration in tuma and tahara. In tuma and tahara, the consideration is rove or miut, and that's all that matters. And so Tosfot says that that's the case here. Same thing by nevela. He says when you're dealing with nevela, which is tmeya, then the nevela versus something that's tahor, the consideration is rove, not notein tam. With regards to eating it or isur, then you'll have an issue of notein tam with regards to nevela and the kosher meat. But when you're dealing with tuma and tahara, rove and miut are the only consideration here. So that's a first important point that Tosfot makes. The second point that Tosfot makes is also that you don't need it to be rove water over here in order for the mikveh to work, to be mater of the water, as long as it's not a minority. Meaning, even if it's 50-50, it would work over here. Because if it's 50-50, then the water still exists. If the water exists, then when you put it in the mikveh, that hashaka works, it makes the water tahor. The brine is meaningless because the brine never is mikabel tuma. So as long as the water is not patel, then the mikveh will successfully be mitaher the water. If the water is significant, just not the rove, it will also succeed over here. And that's why Tosafot says it doesn't even have to be that the rove water is the rove. It just has to be that the rove water is not the minority. As long as it's even 50-50, then this will succeed over here at being mitaheret through hashaka. And there's a big difference over here because if you successfully are mitaheret through hashaka, then you don't have an issue because the waters are tahorim. Then when you add it to the gdera later on, there's no chozer v'neor because you were mitaher the waters. The problem becomes when the brine was the majority, and then the minority was water, so we didn't consider the water. It was batel to the brine. So that water that was tamei, we consider as if gone. That will reawaken in a situation where you add it back to waters in the kdeira, then that will be a problem. But if you're at 50-50 or the majority is water, then the hashaka actually is mitair the water, and then you won't have any issue. The problem we have here, obviously, is that we don't know. We bought this from the Amaritz, and you don't know whether the majority is water or the majority is brine. And therefore, what Reish Lakish is pointing out is that you have a not mimonov shach, you can make it tahor by putting it in the mikveh. But that, Rabbi Yirmiyah points out, is only good to the point where you use it without adding water to it. But if you add water to it, then you could reawaken the waters that are there, because we didn't know how you were mitayer it. If you were successfully mitayer it because the mikveh took care of the water, then you're right, there's nothing to discuss. But you had a possibility that the reason it's tahor is because the water was the minority, the brine overwhelmed it, and then that water that's tamei still exists, and can be reawakened. This also favors the view of when we say batel berov, that doesn't mean that the minority has disappeared. It just means that our perspective of looking at this item is, now I have to determine what the status of this item is, the rove will be koveya. Not that the rove now makes it that as if the other item doesn't exist, it's subsumed, and then everything takes on the status of the brine, because then otherwise it'd be harder to say choser v'neor, that it reawakened later on. If you say that minority exists, it's just insignificant. I mean, the robe dictates how we're going to view this item. In the interim, then you could see when the other items come into play, then you could reawaken that minority because it still exists. If you say that robo, kukulo, or robe means that it wipes out the miut entirely as if it doesn't exist, as if it now becomes a 100% whatever the robe is, then it'd be much harder to argue about this choser v'neor. So that does favor the view that when you have a robe that is overwhelming, it's a mechanism for achra'ah, or it's a mechanism for how we look at it in the current state, not that it actually changes the mitziyut to say that whatever we have here is 100% of whatever the robe is. The other thing that Bali Tosafot point out is that we had in the Gemara in Chulin and Menachot, this idea when you have three items that come together, for instance, if you have a nevela that drops into a pot full of meat and gravy, so the problem is that the nevela is the same as the meat that's there, and that's called min b'mino. And min b'mino is enu batel, and that creates a problem for you. But the gravy that's there is enu mino, and it could then be mevatel the nevela. So we had a principle over there that we look at the pieces of meat that are in the pot, kishe eno, as if it doesn't exist. So we look at the nevela that falls in, as if it's alone with the gravy, and if the gravy could have overwhelmed that piece of nevela, then it's batel, even though there's min b'mino over there, because the only problem with the mino, with the other pieces of meat, is we don't know which piece of meat is the nevela. Because you have the nevela and you have these other pieces of meat, and we don't know which is which, and therefore you can't determine. Each piece of meat is heter. We just don't know which one is heter. Over there you could say, drop the heter, other pieces of meat, and then the gravy can overwhelm the piece of nevela. But those what points out is you can't say that over here. You can't say over here, oh, let's look at the water of the kateras that doesn't exist, and then we'll see that the brine overwhelms the waters that are there, or whatever's in the ktera will overwhelm the brine that's there. Because over here, the other waters become tameh. It's not like the case of nevela and the other pieces of meat, where the nevela and the meat are all there, we just don't know how to identify which is which. Over here, the waters become mixed to the point where all the waters are tameh. And so no, you can no longer say, oh, let's look at the water that's there in the kateras, if it doesn't exist, and see if we can be mevatel this water. That's not the case here, because they become a single entity, and therefore you can't be mevatel it, and can't look at it as a misha'eno. The last thing the Balei Tosafot speak about, which is a massive Balei Tosafot that goes on to the next Amud, is the idea of this concept of choser v'neor. When do we apply choser v'neor? And how does that work in the context or contrast to comma batil, which is that as something falls into something, we say each drop that falls in is batel. So we have many instances where you have something that is going into a larger item, and we say the smaller item that's going in, whether it's Easter or whether it's Tuma, that as each drop goes in, it's batel. And so then if you keep going and keep going, when do you apply choser v'neor, and when do you say rishon comma batil? How do you deal with that? So the Rabbeinu Tam has a position in order to deal with that, and he says that Rabbeinu Tam wants to chalek ben heter de gadel below hefsek, heikadi hefsek. Depends on whether there is stopping along the way or there's no stopping along the way. When something happens on a continuous basis, then you can't say kama batil till the point where it doesn't exist. Because since it's happening on a continuous basis, then as the first one drops in, you're right, it's batel. Second one, batel. But then, if this continues without any stop, there's no time for bittul. There's no time for bittul, then this concept of choser v'neor will apply. And then if the item reaches a significant quantity within whatever it's falling into, it will cause a problem. On the other hand, if while you're pouring it in, it stopped, or it's happening in a slow way, which is a poor little stop, then in that situation, you say kama batil. And it doesn't matter how much is going to go in. As soon as the first thing goes in, batel, then you have a stop. When you put the new item in, it also then is batel. Rabbeinu Tam differentiates between kama batel and choser v'neor based on the properties of how it's happening. If it happens on a continuous basis or a constant basis, then we apply choser v'neor. If it happens in a stuttered manner, then each time it goes in, it's batel, and it will not be chozer v'neor. That's the way the Rabbeinu Tam explains it. And that's how he explains many different gemarot, including the gemara in the beginning of Baba Batra that many learn with regards to a wall that falls down when there's kilayim that's growing there. If he puts the wall back up, and then it falls down again. So between the two times that the wall was down, the kilayim grew 1/200th, which would make it asur. But since you put up a wall in between, that creates a hefsek. That hefsek makes it that the first 1/100th that grew is batel, and when the second one grew, it's not connected to the first one. And that's one of the applications of what the Rabbeinu Tam is saying. When you have hefsek, it's kama kama batel, and it does not chozer v'neor. That the Baalei Tosafot brings and tries to answer many questions with that. But then the Baalei Tosafot himself says that they don't think that that's the right explanation, but rather, v'nira l'rabi, Rebbe says, the b'chol duchta yesh lo liot ne'or. No matter what, there is this concept of chozer ne'or, afilu b'hefsek, against the Rabbeinu Tam, even when there's a stop or a stuttering of the item of isur or tumah that's entering in over here, there's still chozer v'ne'or. Basically what he says is the concept of kama kama batel means that each item as it goes in is batel until it reaches a threshold. And when it reaches that threshold, it's chozer v'ne'or. And what that threshold is not clear. And then the Baalei Tosafot spend much time trying to discuss what these thresholds are. Are the thresholds rov? Or is the threshold notein tam? That's the first thing he discusses. And then he also discusses what happens in reverse. If heter falls into isur. When do we say that, when heter falls into isur, do we say kama kama batel? But then do we apply chozer v'ne'or, which means that once the heter reaches a certain quantity or threshold, maybe it should have the capacity to be mati or that which it's in? Or does that only apply when isur is going into heter, that you have chozer v'ne'or, but not when heter is going into isur? And then when are the instances by which heter will overwhelm isur? And Tosafot then says that there's probably some distinction between yayin nesech, where the main sugya about chozer v'ne'or and kama kama batel are discussed, and other isurim. So he speculates, he goes back and forth, maybe it's different by yayin nesech, it should be the chumra by yayin nesech. Then he says maybe it should be the kula by yayin nesech. And how that applies to other isurim is dependent on that. And he says the same thing with regards to heter into isur. And then in the end he comes to the following conclusion. Oshema yayin nesech batel, uminash menin and the koshukain, that it should apply to other isurim, or the rebuta nakte, and by yayin nesech it's a chiddush because it's a problem b'mashu, because it is oser b'mashu, and therefore Gemara brought that day, even in that situation it's kama kama batel, until you reach the threshold of what the Tosafot seems to say is notein tam, and once it reaches that threshold of notein tam, 1/60, then it would also chozer v'ne'or and ruin it, and chen nir le'ikar, Rishon batel, davka ad shishim. That Rishon is batel until it reaches the threshold of 1/60th. Can appreciate the Isur the go hetera. That's true when Isur goes into heter, and that's true both of Yayin Nesech as well as other Isurim. Ube hetera the go Isura, and when you have heter going into Isur, pekoshu, as long as you have any amount of heter that goes in there, doesn't matter how much goes in there, it'll always be problematic. Aval, b'shari surim, anything besides yayin nesech, afilu heter lego isura, chozer v'ne'or. Then if you have a heter that keeps going in, going in, and going in, eventually it will reach the threshold by which you'll be chozer v'ne'or, and be mevata, a heter k'shuruaba, ajei bo shishim. If it reaches the threshold by which now it's 60/1, it also there will work to be mevatel. So Tosafot in the end says that this idea of chozer v'ne'or applies even when you have kama kama batil, whether it's happening on a continuous flow or a hefsek flow, that doesn't matter. And the kama kama batel will work until the point that it reaches a significant threshold. By Yisurim, it's true, by Yayin Nesech and by other Yisurim, once it reaches the point or threshold of Notein Tam, then it's Chozer V'Neir and the Rishon Batel is wiped out in a sense or no longer relevant. In the reverse, where it's Heter L'Toch Isura, then in that situation, in Yayin Nesech, it doesn't matter how much heter goes in, it'll always be problematic. For other Isurim, once the heter reaches a threshold of 60/1, then it'll be chozer v'ne'or, and it actually will be mitaher, or mivatel, whatever it is that it is in contact with. Then Tosafot says, even though in the end I said that when it goes in drop by drop, it is batel only until shishim, 60/1, He says, "V'lo nafkalan midei ilo alocha kein ilav." In the end, it doesn't really matter whether the alocha is that by yayin nesech it works, rishon rishon bato, until shishim and reawakened, or whether it doesn't work. According to those that hold today that the shikshuk, the little movement of the wine by the ovei kochavim, doesn't make it into yayin nesech. Because they treat it like stam yenam and not yayin nesech. And Rabbeinu Tam is of the view that stam yenam is mutar ba'ana. So then, in lan lomar shul ser b'koshu. If it's mutar ba'ana, then the whole concept of the chumrah of yayin nesech no longer exists, and therefore it won't be oser b'koshu. V'davar poshut hu. It seems very straightforward, nearly dvarav, that which Rabbeinu Tam seems to make sense. Shul achmir bo chumrah de yayin nesech l'sor b'mashu. That why would you treat it like yayin nesech to make it oser b'koshu? Came into mutar b'ana, kisurim kalim. And therefore, based on that Rabbeinu Tam's leniency, which we find in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, where Rashi and the Baalei Tosafot speak about this a lot, that the Yain in their day, they didn't believe that the Dinei Gemara of Yain Nesech applied necessarily to the Goyim that they lived amongst. And they don't believe that we really have Yain Nesech anymore, and everything is Stam Yainam. If everything's Stam Yainam, and Rabbeinu Tam believes that it's mutar b'ana, then the Baalei Tosafot are saying the next step from that is if it's mutar b'ana, it can't be oser b'koshu. They seem to be a correlated items. If that's the case, then the yayin of Ovdei Kochavim today, we don't have to worry about this issue of whether it is or isn't kama kama batil and atshishim, because you're going to treat it like any other isur. You're going to treat it like any other thing that is asur. And since it's mutar b'ana, it's not oser b'koshu, it's oser like anything else that is oser or any other isur, and then we would treat it like any other isur. And therefore the din over here, whether I'm uncertain as to what to do with the yayin nesech, I can treat Yayin Nesek now like Shari Surim, and by Shari Surim, I'm sure that it's Kama Kama Batel until it reaches a threshold of 60 to 1, which is Notein Tam. So that's what Tosafot speaks about here. Spends a lot of time discussing that, but it's obviously a very important principle of Kama Kama Batel, Chozer V'Neyor. And then on top of that, he has the additional aspect, which is the focus on Yayin Nesek, and the way that there's a reminder of what we learned in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. The Baalei Tosafot really believe that the concept of Yayin Nesech has really gone by the wayside in dealing with the Goyim that they are traveling amongst, and that there's no longer a din of Sikhsuch, and they're touching the wine that makes it into something that is Yayin Nesech. It makes it into Stam Yena, so that'll be Osur Beishtiyah, not Osur Bana, at least according to the Rabbeinu Tam. Although the Ramah paskins that we are Choshesh by Stam Yena, to treat it like Yayin Nesech, and that it is Asur Ba'ana, or one should consider it or classify it as Asur Ba'ana, but at least the Baalei Tosafot and the Rabbeinu Tam here seem to have a view that the Yayin of Goyim is not as chamur as the status that's given to it in the Gemara. Now the Gemara continues and says, Amarle Abaye, Yotev Rav Dimi v'Kamarlai Shmaitita. Rav Dimi was saying over this whole memra of Rish Lakish, and then the qualification of Rabbi Yirmiya. So Amarle Abaye, Abaye says to Rav Dimi, V'chi tumash v'teila chazra v'ne'ura. How could it be that if it's already batel, that it reawakens? Or in essence, what Abaye is saying is, once something is batel, it's gone. That's like the other view of bitel, which is bitel takes whatever is in the minority and transforms it into the majority, and it's as if it doesn't exist anymore. So how can you have this concept of chozer v'ne'ura once it's already batel? So Amarle, Rav Dimi says back to Abaye, V'at lo tizbira? You don't hold of this concept of Chozer V'Neyor? Vatznan. We have a Mishnah in Trumot that says, Sa Trumat Me'ah. You have a Sa'ah worth of Trumah, but it's Trumat Me'ah. Trumat Me'ah is given to the Kohen, but the Kohen cannot eat it. The only thing a Kohen can do with Trumat Me'ah is burn it. He's allowed to get Hanah from it when he's burning it, so he's allowed to light it as a candle if it's Shemet. Otherwise, if he can't get any Hanah through Kli'ah, through the destruction of it, then he has to just get rid of it, destroy it, but it can't be eaten by the Kohen. So you have a sub Trumat Me'ah, Shenafla, the Me'ah Chulin, Tehorim, that falls into 100 Sa'ot of Chulin Tehorim. This Chulin is items that have yet to be Mukshar the Kabbal Tumah, so they remain Tehor when the item that's Tameh falls in there. So now you have 100 to 1, which also happens to be the threshold of Bittul for Trumah. Trumah is batel midrabanan at 100 to 1. And that you have here. You have 100 of chulin torin that would then be mevatel the one sa'ah of trumat me'ah. In essence, the trumat me'ah doesn't exist anymore. It is batel to the me'ah of chulin. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, teirom v'tirakeh. Yarum, you have to lift out of there a sa'ah v'tirakeh. And then you have to let it rot or go bad. Shani Omer, because I say, Hisa'ash nafla, Hisa'ash alta. The sa'ah that I pull out is the sa'ah that went in. I assume that whatever I'm taking out is definitely what I put in. Now, conceptually, we're dealing with a dinder abonon. So at this point, whatever's in there is batel, and therefore, there is no problem of eating truma. There is no problem of tuma. Everything is batel now. So then, when he says you take it out, and I assume it's the same sa'ah, is because rabbinically, I am assuming that whatever sa'ah you took out was the sa'ah that fell in, and therefore it has impact. That impact is, number one, the sa'ah that you took out goes away and has tirakeh, goes to rot. And the question is, why does it go to rot? You can see over here, the Shita Mekubetzet brings an alternate girsa, the Baal HaTosafot supposed to speak about it, and the Yerushalmi, that the girsa is tisareif, it is teirom v'tisareif. The Shita Mekubetzet brings a similar girsa, and the Mishnayot in Trumot, if you look them up, says tisareif. Now, if you say teirom v'tisareif, it's much more understandable. Because in that case, it's treated like trumat me'ah. Trumat me'ah, the Kohen gets, and then he can burn it and use it while he is burning it. And that's what the meaning of the tisareif would mean. Terakev is an indication of an isur hana'ah over here. And then you'd have to explain why there's a necessity for an isur hana'ah over here. So the Baal HaTosafot, in discussing this, speak about the fact that maybe tisareif in this situation is synonymous with terakev. You're right, sometimes tisareif means that the Kohen can burn it and get enough from it, but maybe over here tisareif is synonymous with tirakeh, which means it's usur ba'ana, and you have to get rid of it. And he makes such a suggestion, Rabbeinu Tam Mefaresh, the tirakeh and tisareif of kol echad. It's all the same thing here, and it all means usur ba'ana. The reason being is because we're afraid that the people are going to be mekil. When it came to mixtures of truma and chulin, people were very mekil. And if we allow the Kohen to get hanah from it, they're also going to come to eat it. And it's clear that you can't eat it because it's trumat me'ah, at least rabbinically. And we didn't want that to happen, so therefore they imposed a isur hana'ah here and forced you to burn it or to have it rot. And that would then mean the meaning of tirakev and tisareif would be the same thing. Or you would have to say, and that's what Tosafot says in the end, that there's a machloket between B'nai Bavel and B'nai Eretz Yisrael. That our Shas believes tirakev, there's an isur hana'ah. But the Shas Yushalmi believes Tisareif that there is no Isur Hana'ah. The only problem with assuming there is an Isur Hana'ah is then why do you need to take it out of the mixture? The idea of taking it out of the mixture is because of what's called Gezel Kohanim, or Gezel HaShevet. We don't want people to think that Shuma can just be dumped in and be Nitbatel, then you don't have to give it to the Kohen. We want you to have to give what belongs to the Kohen to the Kohen. Over here, there's Truma that fell in here. So there's a monetary obligation to give to the Kohen that which belongs to him. So you can give from amongst the mixture, you give him a sa'ah. That sa'ah represents the sa'ah that fell in, and thereby you discharge your obligation in terms of your indebtedness to the shevet, which is the truma that fell in there that you owe them that money. The only problem is, if you think there's an isur hana'ah, then it's valueless. If it's valueless, then why do you have to give it to the Kohanim? There's no gezel shevet anymore because they're not going to get any benefit from it. You could argue, and probably that's what's happening over here, is that we don't want the person who has it here to think that you can be mevato truma, or that the truma is gone. We want to treat it like truma. So even if it's going to have us isur hana'ah, we want you to remove it so that you understand that there's truma subsumed in here, and that there's gezel shevet in other situations where it's not tmeah, where it's tohora. We would want you to take it off. And so even in the cases where it's tmeah, we make you take it off, even though there's no value to it. And it's going to be burnt anyway. That's the view of Rabbi Eliezer. Chachamim amrim, te'aleh v'te'achel. Rashi translates te'aleh over here, ti'batel. It's batel, and then you can eat it. And now we're going to have qualifications of how you eat it. Which is, Rashi says that you don't have to take anything off over here. You don't have to remove anything because it's 100 to 1, it's batel. Go ahead and eat it. We're going to have certain rules about how you eat it. But other than that, there's no question of truma. The whole thing is chulin because of the fact that it's batel, the truma that's batel there. And Israel can eat it without any problem. That's the way Rashi says it. He still says that there is a gzeirah that you have to give the value to the Kohen. But he says you don't have to take it out of this mixture. You can give it out of money. You can pay him money. You can give him equivalent value. You don't have to take it out of here. You just pay the Kohen, so there's no gezel hashevet. But you don't have to take it from this mixture in particular. Rashi reads the word over here, taleh, as being differentiated from teirom. Teirom means to remove. Tealeh means to be batel. Lashon that is used many times in the Mishnah Gemara. Oleh b'shishim. Oleh b'shishim means it's batel b'shishim. The Rabbeinu Gershom here, on the other hand, says that when it says, v'chamim omrim taleh, klomar shiafrish mimenu sa'ah. Taleh means the same thing as teirom, which means to take off a sa'ah from it. And the Balei Tosafot bring a similar lashon, which is perish bakuntris. Taleh lashon bituhu, below lashon harama, means bituhu, not lifting it out. And then he brings other evidence to the fact about dinimo, but he acknowledges that there are others who say otherwise, and we see it in the Rabbeinu Gershom, who says that the taleh over here is the same thing as teirom that is mentioned by Rabbi Eliezer before, just a different word for the same thing. Now, the difference will be, where the remainder of the Mishnah, what does it apply to? According to the Rabbeinu Gershom, he says it explicitly, that sa'ah, according to the Rabbana that he took out, has these rules. The remaining 100 sa'ah that you have are chulin gemurim. They have no rules to them. You can do whatever you want with them. There's no rules at all. You can eat them the way you like. You can treat them the way you like. And none of the remainder of the Mishnah applies to them. What the remainder of the Mishnah is speaking of, that sa'ah that you took off and gave to the goyim, this is the din of it. According to Rashi, that the word taleh here means batel, then this is the rule for the 101 sa'ah. This is what you have to do for all these 101 sa'ah that are batel. And that is teachel nikudim. You have to eat it. Rashi quotes nikudim meaning yovesh, dry. Eat it when it's dry. If you eat it when it's dry, then the tahor parts over here never are mikabel tuma because they never were mukshar the kabel tuma. And therefore the item that's tamei will not affect the tahor items that are there. So as long as you eat it nikudim, dry, it's not problematic. And Rashi brings proof from that from the story in Yoshua, the Gibonim, that came and pretended to be from far away when they signed the peace treaty with Bnei Israel. It says there about their bread, it was nikudim, that it had either signs of dryness on it or mold on it. Meaning it was bread that was already old, it already had aged, and it was dry. So that's what nikudim means. The Rabbeinu Gershom, on the other hand, brings a other interpretation. Eat the amar nikudim perurim perurim. Means small amounts, pachot mikabetza. Small amounts that are less than a kebetza or a half kebetza size, that he says is what nikudim means. O klayot, or you eat it roasted, because again, roasting it will not enter a liquid into the situation, and therefore you will have no tuma that comes about. O tilosh v'mei peirot, or you knead it with fruit juices. Rashi points out, either apple juice or a strawberry juice. You can't use wine or shemen, because wine and shemen are considered to be mashkim, that are makshir the kabel tuma. They're one of the seven mashkim that are makshir the kabel tuma. So it has to be a fruit juice that doesn't have a classification of zeyah and not of a mashke. And if you need it with that, then it's not mukshir the kabel tuma. You don't have a problem of tuma. O titchalek li'isot. Or you break it up into smaller dough balls. As long as no one ball has the size of a beitza. Because kebeitza is the minimum size for conveyance of tuma by tuma toklim. Therefore, as long as you keep it below that threshold, you're not going to have a problem of the conveyance of tumah, because you'll never have an aggregate amount of tumah in a single location. That's why Rashi probably explained nikudim differently, because otherwise nikudim and this seem to be similar. Nikudim might be a standard size or a half beitza or something like that, but nevertheless, you already have that in the latter part of the Mishnah, which is you have to eat it less than a kebeitza. So if nikudim means less than a kebeitza, you're saying the same thing twice. That's why Rashi in all likelihood said nikudim meant dried out. According to the Rabbeinu Gershom, since this item that you're giving is the truma, and that's what we're speaking about in terms of the chachamim, that's why you have to have all these precautions in order not to make it tamei, because it's classified like truma, we're going to treat it like truma, therefore we want to take these precautions in order not to make it tameiah. On the other hand, based on Rashi's interpretation that we're speaking about the whole mixture, why do you need all of these precautions? That will be explained further on when we try to understand what exactly Rabbi Eliezer requires in this instance. And Rashi is basically saying that the same problems that we have that Rabbi Eliezer requires you to do with the remainder of the chulin, so do the chachamim say you have to do that with the whole mixture for the same worries, for the same reason. Now, all of this is to get to the next piece. V'tani Allah, and we say on that, or we qualify that by saying, Utan chulin l'Rabbi Eliezer matehe aleihen. Those chulin, according to Rabbi Eliezer, what do you do with them? Meaning, we already addressed what the chachamim say you have to do. According to the Rabbeinu Gershom, that's what you have to do with the sa'ah. The remainder is chulin, you don't have to do anything with it. According to Rashi, the whole 101 mixture, this is what you have to do with it. But Rabbi Eliezer, who says you took off a sa'ah of trumah here, and we assume the sa'ah that you took off was the trumah tmeah, then the remaining chulin that's there should be classified as chulin. So then maybe you should be able to eat it without any qualifications. So the Gemara says, that on that we qualified Rabbi Eliezer's position and says, Yachlu nikudim, o klayot, o yoloshim emei peirot, o tichalek liyisot, vaj lo yeh kabetza makom echad, as long as there's not a kabetza in one place. The same qualifications the Rabbanan have about, according to Rashi, the whole mixture, according to the Rabbeinu Gershom about that one sa'ah, Rabbi Eliezer has about the remaining 100. One he gave away to the Kohen, which is the Trumat Me'ah, the Mishnah tells you what you do with it, either Tisareif or Tirakeif. But the remaining 100, he says you treat it the same way the Chachamim say. And the question is, why do you have to deal with the remaining Chulin that's there? But Amar Ular Matam, what's the reason here? Gzeira Shemi Avi Kab Chulin Tmeim Im Makom Acher. Our problem is that maybe you're going to bring a Kab worth of Chulin Tmeim from somewhere else. The Kab Va'od Mimin Zeh. And then you're going to take a kav and a little more from this mixture. And sovar, the person's going to think, eveltinu beruba. It's going to be batel berub. Became into ika hai mashuhu. And now that you have this mashu in there, matzah min et mino v'ne'ur. Min found its mino, and now it awakened again. So you see here, based on that mishnah, that we have a concept of chozer v'ne'ur. Because, as Rashi explains over here, Dichashvinalu Torim the Gamre. If we treat them as being Torah the Gamre, Ikal Mechash, you could worry about Heavile Kav, Shar Chulim Tmeim. He has a Kav worth of Chulim, Maiti La, Umarev La, Bekav, Va'od, Mimin Zeh. He's gonna mix it with a Kav and a little more of this. The Kav and a little more of this is Tahor. And the majority is Tahor. Kasavari Badle, the Kav Kama Beruba, Dahai Kav Va'od. The Kav Va'od from the stuff that's left over from Rabbi Eliezer, that's Tahor. I'm going to put it together with the chulin tmeim, but it's the majority. And since it has a kavod, that's going to overwhelm it. So now I'm going to be mevatel it, and it's all going to be tahor, no problem. But the possibility is, since in that kavod, there could be something that is echad mimea tamei min truma. You might have some of that residual of truma that existed in this mixture, and then actually you don't have a rove of tahor anymore. You actually have a rove of tamei. This person's going to think that he has a mixture that's tahor. Meantime, he really has a mixture that is tameh. Because it's not going to be palga but palga, it'll be 50-50, or even be a majority of tum'ah, and that's a problem. But what you see here is chozer v'ne'or. Even though the truma doesn't exist, if you ate this chulin by itself, you'd be fine. You can do whatever you want with it. And truthfully, even Rabbi Eliezer, what we say that he say about that, he has to eat it in a certain way, it's not because it inherently is problematic. In itself, you could have eaten any way you want. The only reason we have to worry about it is if you mix it together with something that's tameh. And that's the problem of chozer v'ne'or. And what he's saying is to Abaye, here you go, chozer v'ne'or. How could you deny it? Amarle, im tuma oreret tuma, tara oreret tuma. Says there's a big difference. Over here, the tuma of chulin awakens the tuma of the truma tmeah that was in the other mixture. That's because you have two, we'll call it negative forces that are meeting up together. And that negative force of Tumah awakens the negative force of Tumah that's found there. Same would be true, the Talmud Tosafot would say, Koshukein Isur is Morer Isur. When you have Isur, it's going to awaken other Isur, because there are Asurim. How Rabbi says, who says that something that is Tahor will awaken something that's Tameh? The example here by the Deira is the case where the brine and the water are together. The brine is not Tameh. The minority of water was Tameh, or we have a Chashash that it was Tameh. Now you put it into a bigger k'teira, the waters in that k'teira are tehorim. Who says that those waters that are tehorim awaken the tuma in the brine? If they were tmeim, you'd have something to say. But if they're tmeim already, there's nothing to discuss because it's already tameh. But if they are tehorim, who says water that's tahor is strong enough or is similar enough to the minority of water that's tameh that it will reawaken it? And therefore Abaye makes a distinction between chozer v'ne'or, where it is isur and isur, or tuma and tuma, versus something that's tara and Tuma'a, or maybe even Heter and Isur, who says that that can awaken the item that has already been Nitbatel. Now, Tosfot over here just makes one point, which is, wait a minute, how is even Batel the item over here? The whole problem we have is that you're going to take a dough that is majority Tahor, because you think it's Tahor based on the mixture that you have. You're going to take something away, make that majority Tahor, and be Mevatel Tuma Lechatchila. Who says you're allowed to be Mevatel and Isur Lechatchila? Bitul is a concept b'diavad. It's not something we do Lechatchila. He says, Mayoil, Ha'im Mevatel Isur Lechatchila. Va'afilu Shogeg, even if it happens unintentionally. In Bitlo, Enu Mevutal. If you did it unintentionally, but you were trying to do it, it still is problematic. Since there is one opinion in Gittin that if you did it unintentionally, that it would work. Maybe what we're doing over here is because it'd be shogeg, because kesover shemutar levatel. He thinks maybe it's mutar levatel. That's omer mutar, which is a discussion in the Gemara in other places as to whether omer mutar is classified as a shogeg or not. But if you classify omer mutar as a shogeg, and you believe by shogeg that bitul works, then maybe that's the scenario that we're speaking about over here. Otherwise, Tosfot says, he's trying to be Mevatel and Isur. Why are we worried about someone like that? He can't do it anyway. It's absurd to do it. You shouldn't have to worry about people like that because they're doing something that is improper. So Tosfot says, maybe if it's Omer Mutar and people think you can't do it, maybe it goes there because of those scenarios or those situations. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots at the top of Kaf Gimel, Amud Aleph.